We're just doing that verse where it talks about a good minister, you know, puts the brethren in remembrance of these things. And we've just been going the last couple sermons other than this morning. Boy, this morning was frustrating. Oh, I just so badly wanted to be able to talk to some folks that I know that are having a struggle. And they're around people that are just falling apart like crazy. They're even talking about the King James Bible not being the Word of God. Just, it's the best, all that kind of junk. It's just, I guess it's common to see where people are going, but we talked about how it's so subtle and it's so sneaky, and so we get bewitched and talks about who is it that's bewitching us. And they'll get it in their judgment. But even if it's the judgment seat of Christ, they'll pay in that works department, and it's too bad. It's amazing that most of the people I know of that are having struggles, their struggle is with the brethren and the families, not the lost people. You know, I know, Brian, you guys have had struggles with the church family. You know, the lost people could care less anymore. So we just talked this morning about how this is happening to us and heading towards the flesh, and we don't even know it. That was my point. We don't even know when we're falling backwards unless you stay in that book and you realize that you're going to fight every day. So, and I just heard through that thing, we were having computer problems, we were having all sorts of different kind of problems. You know what, I see Bob there. I'm going to invite him in because he couldn't find us this morning. I changed my title just a little bit, but not very much. Maybe Bob can't find us there. I invited him into this thing, see if he can get into us. So tonight, we're going to go back to the remembrance theme a little bit. And what I've got here for us to remember, to remind us, see, this remembrance thing is nothing new. It's just a Bible word for review is what it is. And we're going to look tonight at some things that we should remember. Let's turn to Acts chapter 19. Yeah, lost people. Well, it's like this. Lost people are so used to letting everybody believe what they want. I mean, they're around Hindu, Bindus, and Wambus, and other lost people that have their own little weird thoughts about stuff, and they just don't talk about that stuff because they don't care if you believe what they believe. Some of them don't even believe anything. They don't care if you believe something or not. It's just your life. That's kind of thing. Unless it's some kind of a political issue. Now, they'll fight blood for political stuff. Because not because they're afraid of the country going down, it's because they're afraid of losing their money. That's where this is all coming down at. And their freedoms, which they don't even know how many they've already lost. I got a quote here. Let's see what I put with that thing here. You know, when your legislators and your senators vote for things they don't even read, I've never seen such idiocy other than the Bible says, reprobate minds, destitute of truth. They don't even read these big laws. It's such a scam. And it is such a agenda. It's totally of the devil that they don't even know they're being that stupid. Wouldn't have been many years ago that the country would have ran those guys out of office if they had not read the law they were voting for. So the lost people fight over that stuff. The religious people will fight us because we are against their religion. The King James Bible destroys their religion. So they're after us. So like I said this morning, they get stirred when we show up. We don't have to talk about anything. They get stirred. And now here's a motorcycle. You've got to hear that. Can't believe we don't hear that. So, but they get stirred at us. Why are we no longer stirred at them, not mad at them, but feel bad for them? We know what they're missing based on the authority of the Scriptures. So we've backed off because we don't like to see people be stirred because of us. So it actually caused us to back off, and they're being stirred towards us. So my point this morning was, does it bother you to see this stuff, the music, the politics, the country, the churches, the way they're going, all the different Bibles, the people being so deceived with their religion? Or are we becoming immune to that, just living amongst them and making our bucks, not much whole lot guiltier than they are? So that was what this morning was about. And I hope I can type up the notes in such a manner that people can read them and make sense of what I'm trying to say this morning on that wishy-washy, interrupting, frustrating sermon. So let's see if we can't make some sense out of this thing tonight. We're looking at Acts chapter 19, and we're going to look at some things tonight that as a pastor or a preacher or just as another person, as a Christian, the brethren as such, that some things to remind us, to remember. If we're looking at Acts chapter 19, this is a verse that I parked a lot on back somewhere else. And this verse, all right, we'll go down to the whole story, go down to verse 24. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith, which made silver shrines for Diana, chapters 19, verse 24, brought no small gain unto the craftsmen. So here, you know, get money involved here. Whom he called together with the workmen of the occupation and said, sirs, ye know that by this craft we have our wealth. I mean, these little peace symbols, these things in our Christian bookstore that we sell here, doves and miscellaneous Bibles and birthday cards and anniversary cards with Jesus in them and all that stuff. Little pens with born again on them, you know. And they also sell Catholic rosary beads at the same place. They're making their money on this stuff. So whatever these guys are making by this craft, it's their income. Moreover, we see in here that not alone at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, verse 26, this Paul, I like that, this Paul, not just Paul, but this Paul, hath persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they be no gods, which are made with hands, knocking the statues and the scriptures and all that stuff. I got an amen. I just want to make sure that you're all there. Then he says in verse 27, and this is what we need to be doing as a Paul person, so that not only this our craft is in danger to be set at naught, so we are taking away their money by not giving them our money, but also that the temple of the great goddess Diana should be despised. So whatever religion you had in the past, be it Baptist or Lutheran or whatever it is, or no religion or the Pope or whatever, I despise that stuff today. And then it says, and her magnificence should be destroyed. These mega churches, this religion, this country, the magnificence of all these things that were wrong, public school. I still don't want kids to go to public school. I know what's going on the inside there. I take them in my little classes, but I know what's going on in their classrooms. I despise that stuff. You know, the magnificence of the game. Why do the kids want to go into public school? They want to ride the bus. They want to be in their little homecoming parade. These are the things that we show our little kids. We take them to the games, we take them to the sports, they see this great big gym, they see all these kids outside playing in the playground, and all the friends they have, and they get all these new books, and they get to wear what they want. This to the kids, that's magnificent stuff. And we need to destroy that magnificence. And it says here, should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worshipeth. I mean, the whole world is behind us, education and science and religion. So, and I did a sermon on that, Despise and Destroy, May 25th, 2 years ago, actually. So we won't go over it, but I do have one little thing I'm going to read here from it about why it is we don't want to destroy stuff, why we don't change. I remember even Jeremiah said we got to tear down and throw down and destroy this stuff before we can build. And here's some excuses why we don't want to change things we're doing. Everybody else does it. We always have done it. A little bit doesn't hurt. My conscience doesn't convict me. We know when to quit. You got to make a living. It all depends on how you look at it. Well, you know, that one, you got to make a living, that is true. Paul says that. Listen, man, you need to get out there. You need to work among the fornicators. But those are not the ones I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the fornicating brethren that I want you to stay away from. So, you know, Paul knows us, man, got to get out there. But the ladies don't have to get out there. They got children. And if they don't have children, they got a life. They can do some things. They don't need to be out there in this world. But anyway, it all depends on how you look at it, that type of thing. Here's some other excuses that I've heard. It's too hard of a decision to make. Apparently it is. It amazes me that people don't make the decision they know they need to make, but whatever. I can't make that kind of sacrifice. All things are lawful, you know. That's a good one. We're under grace. Why do I have to change anything? I'll confess it later. Then they'll say, it'll burn, but I won't. I saw someone else do it. Oh, the Lord is coming soon anyway. We have no guarantee this will all work, you know. The future is so bleak. Let's party while we can. I'm tired, it's hot, and it's just family, you know. So those are some of the things that I've heard that keeps us from wanting to despise and destroy what comes into our lives that we have been part of and we want out of. I don't have a big thing against alcohol because I never was an alcoholic. I mean, I know it's wrong. I'm hearing more and more Christians that are drinking. Social drinking, of course. Yeah, well, I know some that drink. I know an example here where somebody that I know in my past from the grapevine stuff, from the inside, that I know is true, is drinking now and has offered his wife ecstasy. And, oh, I'm telling you, the stuff that I hear, and I believe it to be true, it's quite amazing. But, you know, what's happened? We don't destroy and we don't despise and destroy the stuff that we ought to despise and destroy. Well, it doesn't sound like Paul. Well, I'll tell you what. Paul's the one that taught it. So that is still Paul. So we're looking at tonight a little bit more of the manner of life. That seems to be the big tough thing for Christians to do, to the manner of life. And let's see, where's that verse where Paul says, well, you know, we fully know the manner of life. No, well, no, we don't. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Just review again, remembrance here. Somebody type something so I know that the sound is going through. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 10. How you doing, Adrienne? Is this stuff making sense to you as a young person? Do you see the battle that you've got? And I know you've had to fight your dad a little bit, I suppose. Happens all the time. And it's okay. Trust the book. And the rewards come later, not necessarily today. So we're looking at 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 10. But thou hast fully known my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, and it goes on. But this manner of life thing, this is what people hate about Paul. I believe it. I mean, first of all, they can't imagine that Christ has done all that the Bible says he did. No impute this, and don't impute that, and imputes his righteousness and the faith of Jesus Christ. People never see that, but, you know, whatever. But they do know that Paul preaches the walk in Timothy and Titus. So this is what people, I think, really hate about Paul. So, but do we fully know his manner of life? No, I don't believe we do yet. We're working at it. So, I got a sermon on that too, a series on Paul's manner of life and sample, fully known. We're supposed to follow together, be followers together of me, that's Paul, not the apostles. So there's some stuff on there. Here's my little plan here. We got my little D alliterations here. Discover. You know, we find out what's true and what's not true. Discover the truth. Then we make a decision, a deed, are we going to follow it or not? And we depart from iniquity. Then I have despise and destroy. That's one of the first things we do when we realize what the truth is. We realize that we try to destroy TV, destroy the videos, despise them when they show up. And see, as a pastor, I know the damage those things have done to people. I also know the addiction they have, and it's not easy to stop. I know some people that can't stop videoing and TVing any more than they can stop smoking. I mean, this flesh just grabs onto stuff and won't let go. Okay, if you're that way, just don't be bragging to people that you're a good and Paul-following Christian. I mean, that's my problem. We all got our stuff, and we always will. We're never going to stop doing these, walking these things. But we need to destroy what we can destroy, and we need to despise that stuff. Not just learn to live with it, but despise. I mean, you really hate the stuff. It just despise that stuff. So there's that. And we did go over the last couple of years kind of a pattern of Paul's manner of life, which I came up with here. But I know there's more to it than that. We kind of stopped and we left there. And here's kind of what we came up with here. Other than you make your decision, and you discover, you make your decision, and you destroy and despise things. But there's also, when we're out here with the world, and everybody wants to be out in this world, we can't hide from it, there's prayer. You know, we need to pray on our manner of life. We need to be praying for these things, for these people. There's tears, because we care. There's grace. We have to have grace for people. There is truth. We have to talk about truth amongst that grace. Otherwise, it's not really grace. It's called ignoring. You don't teach anybody something. There's grace, but you also have to have truth of that grace. Mercy. Mercy is in our list. Long-suffering. Patience. Then it gets to where Paul changes his voice because he doubts somebody. He puts the change of voice in there. It gets a little more firm, I would think, is what it is. Then it comes to reprove, which is done by the King James Bible, rebuke, which is done by the King James Bible. And then it comes to this avoid. Then it goes on to send, that's the last thing you can do. You can step away, get away. And if that doesn't work, then they go off to the devil, off to Satan, off to the world as such. So there are some things that we're going to look at that add more to this list. And the one that I still am amazed at in our lives, and that's those things that we're supposed to stay away from. Because the more and more I learn and remember these things, the more and more I see those of us in the Paul realm as such aren't staying away from them. We're going backwards. We're slipping back into the old nature because we have God's grace. So it's a ticket to go back to the old ways. That's how I picture some people. I know some folks that listen to this, you will not have a choice. You have somebody in control of your life. You do not have the choice. I know that someday you're going to be pushed to where you have to make a choice. So it's coming. You're not going to be able to put up with it much longer. That's the way we are. So let's look at a quick thing. We're not going to look them all up, but you know, we're told to avoid certain things. And without giving to the Bible verse, and I'm not good at this either. I'm doing this because I want to learn this better than I do. What and who is it we're supposed to avoid? I mean, Paul says, avoid. Sure, he says, pray, have tears, talk to him, have mercy, have long-suffering, have patience. But, you know, he says, you know, finally, he says, you know what? You need to avoid somebody. Well, who are those people or who are those things that we need to avoid? Okay? Well, you can look them up. I'm going to go quickly on these things here because we've got some other things yet. Romans 16:7 says to avoid those people that cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned. Okay? You've learned Paul's doctrine. Now, you've heard this before. See, this is nothing new tonight. It's just remembrance. So, people that cause division compared to Paul's doctrine, we're actually supposed to avoid them. Well, we're going to fight them. Well, that's true. We'll talk about that in a minute. The heretic thing. Yeah, we're supposed to. Where's my heretic verse here? What do we got here? Reject the heretic. We reject that heretic, sure. But he does say after the first and second admonition. Sometimes we reject these people. We avoid these people, not after one or two times of trying to talk to them. Got to remember that reject the heretic is after one and two, then you reject them. That means you're trying to show them something because you care. So this avoided thing, we got people that don't believe Paul's things at all, and they're King James Bible-only people, they're Baptists, whatever, but they don't believe the follow of Paul. So their doctrine is wrong. So especially when you have parents, when you have children or whatever, we lost Brian on this one, they'll be back, I hope, that we're supposed to avoid these people. They're going to cause division with what Paul's teaching to us. And it amazes me that people go to churches where that's exactly what takes place within that church. They avoid those. They don't avoid those people that cause divisions about Paul. The preachers are causing division even. Weird. So let's avoid that stuff. We want to go to church so badly that you're going to go amongst. Actually, it's against the scriptures to go to a church that doesn't support Paul and preach Paul like you're supposed to. Anyway, we know that we're supposed to avoid profane and vain babblings. That's in 1 Timothy 6 and 2 Timothy chapter 2. Avoid profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science, falsely so-called. The science world goes against what Paul preaches and the Bible preaches. We're supposed to avoid that stuff. Avoiding profane and vain babblings. Foolish and unlearned questions avoid. What a waste of time. What does it say? He says, knowing that they gender strife. You can sit there and argue about the dumbest things. And it's not going to do any good. You're just going to get mad at each other. What's the point? Then he says, avoid foolish questions and genealogies. That's that Baptist apostolic succession thing. Baptistic succession that Baptist was famous for. It even says to avoid contentions. What's the point of fight? Strivings about the law. What's the point? I mean, we've all been in our arguments because we can't get out of them. And there are days when we started them. We shouldn't have probably. Because he says here, they're unprofitable and vain. So what's the point? What have you gained from these contentions and strivings with people? What have we gained? Nothing. In fact, even the people I've tried to help as a person, there's only one left. And the rest have all gone back. So, Paul's he emphasizes that. I mean, just avoid these foolish, unlearned questions, genealogies, contentions, and strivings, and profane and vain babblings, and people that don't want to follow Paul. He says, just stay away from them. Sure does make for lonely days, doesn't it? It does. Here's another one we're supposed to deal with here. It's in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6. We can look that one up just to keep us going here. God, it's good to see Brian and Adriana back. Thought I made you mad about the videos or something, or some of the different things that are out there. Not that videos are bad, I guess. If they teach the right stuff, if you're aware of it, and if the music is good, and they're not wasting your time. That's the biggest thing, and it's visual instead of words that kids need to read. So yeah, it's all part of a scene. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6, where it says Ephesians chapter 5, let's get to the right chapter here. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6, here we go. Verse 6, he says, let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. You know, I think it's very important. Partakers with them means you're participating. I mean, how many things do you go to that you see and you're not participating, but they're there? But to participate with them, that's what he's telling us. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. Those vain words, those are the things the wrath of God is going to come upon lost people. So let's not partake with what lost people do. That's pretty tough. Makes you pretty much an outcast and not friendly and all that kind of stuff. Well, it doesn't have to necessarily. Let's look at another one here. So that's partakers. We're not to partake with a lost people. That's just what it says. With. Partake with. Here's another one of our key words here. Withdraw. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly, and not after the tradition which ye received of us, not after what Paul has taught them and done in their lives, as our example. Supposed to withdraw from them. What if it's your whole church? Well, you're supposed to withdraw. Then he says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 5, there's that list of things of people that don't teach the very words of Jesus Christ. Perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. So these Bible correctors, these churches that are checking the words of Christ in the King James Bible, these people are corrupt. They have corrupt minds and they're destitute of the truth. They might be nice people. They're probably your dad, your mother, your wife, your husband, your friends, your family, your bosses, the people in the community, the grocery store man down there, or whatever. But if they think that this us religious people, they think gain is godliness. How many people do you have in your church? What's your bank account? How you doing? How you doing down there in South Dakota? Well, we're doing terrible. Oh, well, see, God's chastising you. No, not really. Not at all. Matter of fact, things are going pretty well right now. We got 2 months of no income because of the school thing, the 9 month salaries, and you know we got the house and the expenses and all this kind of stuff. But like I say, I stay up late at night because I have my windows open. Cool breeze blows through, and these little finches and meadowlarks that are out there chirping away at night, and you know it's just I'm relaxing finally. School's out for the summer. I don't know. But that doesn't mean that I'm doing everything right at all. Gain is not godliness. We're to be content with godliness, and Paul teaches what godliness really is. It isn't just proper hair and all this kind of stuff that people get into. So those people that think that this gain, the more people you got in your church, the more money you make, the more blessings you get, they think that's godliness. Paul tells us, you know what? Stay away from those people. They're just going to get you frustrated. They're going to wish. They're going to think that your God isn't blessing you, and what am I doing wrong? The whole thing. And I've heard it 1,000,000,000 times. Here's one. It's a tough one. 2 Timothy 2:24. This is part of this whole avoidance thing here that we're looking at, part of our manner of life here. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, and it goes on. Well, that's tough. Well, it's only tough for those of us who have been brought up a Dr. Ruckman style. Because we figure we'd go out there and we'd be tough on people. But what we have to realize here is his words are tough on people. We don't have to strive with them. We talked about that in other sermons, but we're just going to talk to people, show them what the Bible says. Don't have to stick it in their face and sell their wicked as hell, all the kind of talk that these guys are doing. And just talk to them, show them the scriptures. And do it in a manner that is gentle, and do it in a manner that doesn't stir up the mud. They stir it up. They don't like to hear it. They get stressed. They get pressed in the spirit, in their devil spirit. They want out of this stuff. But it isn't because we made them mad with ourselves. It's because of what they're hearing. So, you know, what is it the Bible is? One of the purposes of the Bible is for reproof, for rebuke, for to be admonished. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Then we get into the psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, and that does the admonishing. Is it the music? No, it's the words of Christ that's admonishing us. So we don't have to be the hard nose here. We don't have to be like that guy down in Kansas or Louisiana or something that tells people God hates fags. He's making a huge bad name for God and for the King James Bible. They believe the King James Bible is the only word of God, and they're just embarrassing. They're downright embarrassing. So they're going all about it totally wrong, just 100% totally wrong. Anyway, here look at Ephesians 5:11. Again, we're looking at the manner of life. I'm reminding us some things about the manner of life that we. This seems to be the hardest thing. This one is 5:11, Ephesians. And have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. See, that goes along with the partakers with. This one says fellowship with. There's unfruitful works of darkness everywhere you go. Are you fellowshipping with it? Are you partaking? Is it edifying? Is it going to cause somebody to stumble when they see you there? Is it? Are you there for the flesh? Or is life life? Are you going to cause, like I said, to stumble somebody? Is it the right thing to do? Well, anywhere you go outside your door, the music is bad. The people are dressed wrong. They're acting crazy. They're drinking and everything. Do we need to stay in our doors? No, Paul says the men got to get out there. Paul does tell the women to stay home because, right, and he even warns about those corrupt people coming in to your home. That's the job that dad does, is to fight those people from coming into the home. But it's like almost nil today, or null, whatever the word is. Hardly anybody's doing it. Just look at how everybody's dressing in the home. Look at what they're doing in the home. It's like he says in Timothy chapter 5, there, I think it is, or is it 3, that so many ladies have turned aside after Satan with how they dress and what they talk and how they talk. They could care less what the Bible really says, just so they're making things work better. Anyway, whatever. Let's go on here with have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness. Okay, that's hard enough for people, but then he also says, but rather reprove them. Oh, you mean I got to say something? Well, that's the plan here. I mean, you can quit doing something, but why not tell somebody why? Don't expect them to do it, but you can sure tell them why you did it. You know? But anyway. Here's one. We did this one before, I think. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 14. If any man obey not our word by this epistle, that's Paul, note that man and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. I see most of our people being ashamed that they can't. I'm sorry, friend, but I'm not going to go swimming with you. And you're the one that feels ashamed. No, it's the other way around. They should realize, you say, I'm not going to go swimming, and you tell them why, then they should feel bad. Because, well, I guess I'm showing too much, aren't I? Da, 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 all that stuff. If you're not loud like everybody else, or you're trying to be the man like you're supposed to be without being prideful and arrogant and you know, pretend looker, then there's your testimony right there. But otherwise, we're supposed to have no company with those. They're the ones that are supposed to be ashamed, not us. We've talked about this before. Here's another one. Mark, Romans 16:17. Sorry, Mark, not you, Mark, but Romans chapter 16, verse 17. We're supposed to mark somebody. This one says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses, contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. We did that with avoiding. But we're all supposed to mark them. You know what that's like? That's like Brian and Adriana, Floyd's, or Hugh and Ben, and Peter, I think you've got kids. That you as a parent mark these people, and you tell your kids, you know what? It's not good to be around those people. We shouldn't be around them. We need to mark them. So we're marking them for them. But it's uncle. It's my uncle, Dad. Or somebody says, but it's Dad. Mark the guy and do what you can do to deal with that stuff. Mark the woman. Mark the mother. Mark the brother. Mark somebody that's causing you to go back or cause you to stumble or who's trying to get you to, halt. Because that's what they're trying to do. So we mark them. He also says in Philippians 3:17, brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so, as ye have us for an example. So we're also supposed to mark those people that are somebody we're supposed to talk to and fellowship with. Mark them which walk so, as ye have us for an example. Our friends are supposed to be those that do Paul. A learning Paul. Well, how many of us have a live friend? There's nobody else in this town that does that, except, like I did say, our little bitty podunk little newspaper has a Berean Bible study every time it comes out every week. And that's Paul. It's, I don't know why they do that. I'm hoping in the next year I start to find out what's going on around here and people are interested in what I can teach about Bible and show them some little seeds here and there. We'll see. I'm not known for my patience, but I'm almost out of gas anyway, so I might as well just see how this whole thing pans out. But he does say to mark them which walk so as you have us for an example. So we're to be marking people for our kids, if nothing else. Adriana, Brian should be able to tell you, this one here is going to go against Paul, is going to give you a hard time. I don't want you to hang around them. And for your safety, spiritually, et cetera, et cetera, you need to honor that. For example, that's just an example there. Same thing with you, Ben. And your children, you're supposed to be marking those people in their lives. And it's tough because the people we mark, everybody else likes. For example, Robin Williams. You know, okay, the guy's funny. The guy's good. The guy mocks God. He's got a filthy mouth. He's a perverted man. And yet he's really good at he mocks other guys. Imitates. Is that the word? Imitator? No, what do you call these guys? Rich Little is one, too. They talk like these other people. Imitate. No, that's not what they call them. Come on, somebody type. What's that word? What are these guys called? Robin is just a crazy guy. Well, you take your little kids to a Robin Williams movie, you're not marking him. You mark him as a good guy. That's, to me, that's one of the biggest things about movies. You're marking to your children, to your young people, impersonator, there we go. When you take your children to a video, for example, you are marking those people to that kid that person's okay. That's what I think. You're telling this guy that Robin Williams is funny. Okay, so he can mock God, he can talk bad, da-da-da. We don't do that, but he's a good man. No, he's not a good man. All these movie stars, that's one of the things about movies, you know. So anyway, that's mark either the good guys and the bad guys, and it's all based on Paul. Come on, judgment seat of Christ is going to be based on what Paul teaches. Why learn from the other guys? Learn from Paul. And if there's nobody there, which is the case for most of us, I guess we are our only brethren. Maybe this summer now with school out, I can get more contact with everybody, make some more phone calls and more emails, and maybe pop up a couple sermons or something. I don't know. I've actually got a yard to work on because it's our yard now, and that's been I've been resting. It's been good for me to get out of that stuff. Since we left Tushy, it's been a hard half a year, mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, the whole spiel. But you guys have all been there for us, and that's who we have. No one in Massachusetts. No one in Kadoka. No one else in Delaware. Down there in Georgia, they must be there somewhere, but don't know where they're at yet, do you? I know you've had people talk to you at work, bosses and all that stuff. Mark, you try to tell people, and it just doesn't go anywhere. Well, the increase is his. We know that, but we're supposed to mark these people. When our kids see us fellowshipping with works of darkness, and we see people participating, we're marking those people as okay people. So don't be surprised when your kids grow up and do what they do. Brian and Adriana get bumped all the time, don't they, here lately? Oh, well, Obama will fix it eventually here. Here's one in Titus chapter 3, verse 10. It says, a man that is an heretic after the first and second admonition reject. Okay, we're supposed to reject these heretics. But like I said earlier, we have to remind ourselves, he does tell us to give two shots at it anyway. Then if it doesn't work, it's been vain and unprofitable and a waste of time, causes stress. Striving is the word there. So yeah, that's not any good. So stay away from that stuff. People think that as a Christian, you're supposed to be out there doing everything with everybody. No, Paul doesn't say that. He basically says, pick your crowd you're going to talk to. There was one spot, I think it's in Thessalonians, I'm not totally sure, maybe Corinthians, where Paul goes to talk to a group of people. He goes to talk to individuals because he says, if I go to a group of people, they won't pay any attention. So he kept his mouth shut. Isn't that weird? So what happens if we keep our mouth shut amongst other Christians? They think that we're a chicken. No. It's just that we're trying to do this, Paul's way, not to strive. And we're not to waste a lot of time with foolish questions. We're supposed to reject these people. We're supposed to withdraw from these people. But we're supposed to give two shots at it, first and second admonition. Here's a couple more of them will be done for you tonight. Just kind of consider remembrancing things. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. Now, we talked about leaven this morning and how leaven gets into the dough and that kind of a thing, and it puts gas bubbles in there, so it makes it expand with little pockets of air. And so the loaf of bread, for example, expands and it rises. And actually what you have is got a bunch of holes and some bread around it. And that's what leaven does. Well, we get those worldly gas bubbles into us from where we go, what we see, and what we do. It lightens us up. It loosens us up, and we're just falling backwards. Because that little bit of leaven, it's going to leaven the whole up. It's going to take it all down eventually. But now here he says in 1 Corinthians 5, 7, purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. So, one of the things we have a hard time doing is purging ourselves from the old leaven. There's still leaven left in our flesh that's pumped us up with worldly gas so bad that it's going to still take us down. Even Paul had the same issue. But if we purge out that old leaven, then what do we got? Oh, neat. We have new leaven. That's exciting. New leaven. Same thing. It's still leaven. It's still going to pump us up, going to make us into fluffy Christians if we're not careful. That was this morning a little bit here. Then also another one in 2 Timothy chapter 2, another purging, part of our manner of life. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 21. He says, if a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor. Okay, who are these? Well, I'll go up to verse 20. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but of wood and of earth. And some to honor and some to dishonor. So we need to purge ourselves from the gold, from the wood and earth and dishonor crowd. And he's talking about a great house, like a family. How do we purge ourselves from family? Move to Kadoka. Nobody even knows where Kadoka's at. But he says, if you purge yourself from this, from these wood and hay and wood and of earth, and to the dishonor, you purge yourself from that in your life, it says here, shall be meat for the master's use and prepared unto every good work. That's how it works. Get rid of that old leaven, the old life in our day-to-day living. And this thing tells us godly uses. Sorry about the yawning out there in the video. Okay, so we got rid of the purging crowd. So this is why people don't like Paul. I never thought years ago I would ever preach about doing right or doing the walk when I was a first pastor, because I thought, well, everybody's tired of that. And let's just encourage them with Bible words and stuff. Then I realized about the Paul thing. I realized, you know what? Man, this is the whole gospel of God pretty much tells us how to walk because of all the stuff God has done for us in the past. So let's look at this thing here. Let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 4. He says in verse 4, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which minister questions, rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do. So there's something. We're not to give heed to these fables. You know, God will take your dog and put him to heaven and when he dies and all this kind of stuff. So, sorry about that. And 1 Timothy 1:4. Neither give heed. Get away from. Stay away. Neither give heed. King James writes it so perfectly. And then the last one here, and it's the words have no. H-A-V-E, then N-O. In Ephesians 5:11, which we've done that. We have done that one. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Okay, that's what we're told. We're not to fellowship with them. Fellowship is a big word there. We look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3. But of the times and of the seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I write unto you. We have no need. Well, we have a need. There came a time in those days that these guys are, but of the times and seasons, we know what time, what's going on here. Can't get over how many people ignore what's going on in the country. Like I said this morning, these legislative people, they're voting for bills they've never read. Why is America not stirred for that? We've got what was the other one tonight that, I forgot what it was I said here. Is it here? I forgot what I said. Who knows? That's right here. President vows to press for a new international order that can resolve the challenges of our times. I know a lot of people that don't believe this. All this new world order is a bunch of baloney. Well, what more do you want to hear? The president now wants to push forward for a new international order. Oh, it doesn't say world order. Yeah, you can ignore it if you want. But you young folks, you've got a pretty crummy world coming up. If it isn't the tribulation in your lifetime, if it is, you'll be raptured out of here, which to me is very majorly exciting. So yeah, have no fellowship, unfruitful works of darkness. Have no confidence in the flesh. Philippians chapter 3, verse 3. Your flesh can't do it. You listen, all these other people, these other Baptists especially, that come up to you and say, oh, God's blessed me so much, and I've done this, and I've done that, and God's blessed me so much. And you think to yourself, well, I haven't done that bad of a life. I'm not getting blessed by God. Well, you are, the spiritual blessings. And we got the rapture coming up. I still believe that rapture is true. So, what's the point of having confidence in your flesh? We just can't do it. We can't do it. Doesn't mean to ignore the flesh, because you still need to do things during the day, but have no confidence in it. And then 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 1, Paul says, but of the times and the seasons, however, ye have no need that I write unto you. Well, do we know the times and the seasons we're in? Not quite. We know what it ought to be. We know what it sure seems like it. But he hasn't come back yet. Not going to come back down to here. He's just going to come back and get us up in the air. But anyway, here's one. But of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you. We know what's going on today. World order. That's what I was talking about. The world order. I can't even begin to say the things that are going crazy in our country and in our government. It's amazing. Then lastly, we talked about this already. If any man obey not a word by this epistle, note that man have no company with him. And I read commentaries, what they say there. They say they define what the word is. The word God gives you in your heart. The word God speaks to you. I mean, just all this kind of junk out there. It's amazing. So despise and destroy. Have your patience and have your tears and have your cares and concerns. But just remember that there's a lot of things that we're supposed to stay away from. A lot of people we're supposed to stay away from. Don't have to make a scene. We just stay away from them. And I do believe that pleases God. That's the manner of life. That's a manner of life that we don't hang around certain people. And don't make a big issue out of it. Don't make it a big argument or something. But just make the decision and stick with it, parents.